What's going on with Windows 7 with multi-touch enables certain kinds of games where two different people are touching the screen at once, or where you're just interacting in more complicated ways with your UI. And one of the fun things that happens when you move to Windows 7 and you bring up some touch hardware like this one is that there's some capability given by the OS without your app knowing anything. Okay? So many of you probably have a mouse with a scroll wheel, right? You roll that scroll wheel and the app you're looking at scrolls up and down. Tons and tons of apps understand that. So there are touch gestures that are equivalent to scrolling, and Windows will automatically map those for your app. So let me just bring up a file. I don't want that one. Forgive me. I'm going to bring up a file in some kind of unlikely things. I'm going to take this piece of C# code and open it in Notepad. And I know it's really small and you can't read it, but this isn't about reading it, okay? I'm just going to take my finger and grab onto the screen, and I can scroll up and down the document just like this. Now, this isn't because Notepad has thrilling and exciting touch support added in. It's because Windows takes this series of movements, touch down, the finger move, and the touch up, and maps them to a scroll message that Notepad already knows how to deal with. Okay? So for some applications, you may have a text box or a scroll window or a list box with a scroll bar on it, and users be able to interact with it this way without you writing any code to make that happen. Another really popular built-in thing is zooming. Notepad doesn't really zoom well. My mouse cursor has decided to take a nap. This makes it kind of difficult to, there we go, drag and drop. So I'm going to take the same document and bring it into Word. So again, I can obviously scroll in Word, but Word also understands zooming. So if I take my two fingers close together, touch the screen, and then pull them apart, okay, Word actually now zooms, bumps up the percentage of what size my text is. And I can take my fingers far apart and push them together, and that will be like zooming out. Okay? So again, these messages, this gesture, is being mapped automatically to a zoom message that applications already understand. Okay? So that's kind of simple and built-in capability that you don't need to change your application in order to work with. But the chances are that you want to do something slightly more exciting than that. So you deal with two different possible sets of messages. One is a series of gesture messages. So zooming, which is touch, touch, and then the fingers get closer together, is a gesture. Rotating, which is touch, touch, and then you're moving around on an angle, is a gesture. And so is flick, where you sort of touch, move, and your speed increases as you go through the move. That's considered a flick. And that's different than just plain moving something. A lot of applications will use a flick motion to say that you want to maybe delete something or move something away in a different way than just moving it around might be. So to show you some of those gestures in action and to also kind of give you some inspiration, I want to show you some code from something called, or not code, but some running of what Microsoft calls the Touch Pack. Now the Touch Pack was originally only for OEMs, for companies like Dell that would make a touch unit. They could come and install the Touch Pack on it and ship it out with a Touch Pack on it, and then when it's sitting around on the shelves in Future Shop, you'd have some way to interact with it and see how cool touch was. So I'll show you a couple things from TouchPack. One is this program called Collage. And Collage lets you play around, literally play, with pictures. So I can touch a picture down here in this bottom bar and pull it up onto the work surface to work with it. And I can grab another one and pull it up there. And if I don't want this koala anymore, I can flick him down and he disappears back into the tray and I'm not going to be working with him. I can just touch them to move them around, and I can also resize them exactly the same way as we zoomed in Word. I can rotate them, bring him on top just by touching him. And if I give them a push, it's kind of hard to see, but I'll try to pull my hand way back so you can see right away what's going on. If I kind of give him a push and let go, he keeps moving, okay, even after my finger is not on him anymore. That's called inertia. And it's really an important part of a good touch experience. Something else that's an important part of a good touch experience have to change the background color for you to see this, is a shadow effect. When I click on these pictures, I'll try the coffee cup. Do you see that shadow? It gives the sense that it's lifted up from the screen. That tells you, gives you feedback that I've got hold of it. I've picked it up. And then I can expect that when that shadow is showing, that I can pick it up and move it. And if I hold on here long enough, the shadow goes away. It says, I guess you didn't mean to pick me up. When I move my finger in this context, I'm not moving the picture around. So the shadow is some really important feedback to the user about kind of the mode that we're in. These little subtle touches, when you want to make a really immersive touch experience, you have to look at those really subtle touches. Now, there's more to touch than stretching and shrinking and rotating and moving. There are some way more immersive things that you can do. And to show you those, I thought I'd show you this screensaver called Lagoon. It's also part of the touch pack. This is a screensaver that runs when you leave your machine idle for long enough. And interacting on the touch screen doesn't knock you out of the screensaver. Okay, you have to wiggle the mouse or type to knock yourself out. So left to his own devices, obviously a bunch of fish swimming around. But if I touch the screen, it makes splashes in the water. Okay? And because this is multi-touch, I can touch with all five fingers at once and drag, and you can see multiple trails in the water. So this is obviously a lot more complicated than zooming in or zooming out or rotating, right? It's actually capturing the individual touch messages. And it's kind of cute. When I splash the water, the fish run away in terror. But if I put my finger here and wait in a single location, this is a different kind of gesture entirely. As time goes by, the fish come to check me out. Okay, so they'll all start to gather around where I'm touching. And then when I let go, they'll take off again. So you can't just capture gestures if you wanted to code something like Lagoon. You need to catch each individual touch, up, down, move, even understand how fast I'm moving my finger so you know how big to make the waves that my finger is causing in this imaginary water. So if you want to write this kind of immersive touch application, you have to catch these individual touch messages. So that's down, move, up, as opposed to having them combined for you into a gesture like rotate or pan, panning and scrolling, move you horizontally and vertically, or zooming in and out. So the first question you have to ask yourself when you think about, hey, that touch is pretty sweet. It's not very expensive to add touch hardware into people's lives these days. Maybe I'd like to put some touch in my app. The very first question you have to ask is, do people use your application to consume or to produce? I've heard this also described as lean forward and lean back. So lean back, consuming. I'm watching a video. Okay? I'm fine with touching pause and play and volume controls on the screen itself. It's not terribly precise work. If I miss, I'll just try again in a second. Scrolling, reading blogs, flicking on the screen the way you saw me scrolling through Word, that's easy to do, right? And if I mess up and I scroll too far, I'll just pull it back down again. It's fine. So it's very simple to add touch to a lean back kind of application because there's not tremendous demands on the UI in a lean back application. And for people, literally, will lean back on the couch with a tablet. This machine here is convertible, so the screen rotates and folds down to form a tablet, or with the, we're sure to have them soon, slates. You lean back and you watch your video or you read your blogs, or you scroll through your long Word document, and you don't have tremendous amount of precision in your UI. But the other half of the world is the lean forward. We're literally, you know, think about how you are at your keyboard. You're literally leaning forward to type all your code or to type that mail message or to build that document. And it's not always about typing. If you've got a design that you're building in Visio or some other visual modeling tool, maybe the architecture tools in Visual Studio, you're drawing a picture, making the boxes bigger, moving this guy over, adjusting this line. It's not about typing, but you're very, very intensely focused on what you're doing. Even if I was using a tool like that collage to rearrange pictures on the screen, if what I was doing was designing an ad campaign, that would be super intense lean forward behavior, right? When you're writing a lean forward app, your user experience has a much higher bar set. It has to be right. It's tremendous precision. People be very irritated if they miss select. They meant to click OK, but they click cancel. They meant to click save, but they click don't save. That makes people really bitter, right? So you have a much higher bar when people are producing with your app. So you think about how to get really immersive. The chances are in a touch situation there, you're going to need to capture these individual messages, maybe all the way down to the individual touch messages. There are some controls and some libraries that'll make your life a little simpler, but your very first question has got to be, how important is it that this UI be optimized for touch versus, say, optimized for mouse? So let me show you, I'm actually going to do something rather collage-like over and over again in different technologies. And let's start with this. How many of you are Surface programmers? It's really not surprising that nobody is a Surface programmer. Surfaces cost like $20,000. There are a handful of Surface programmers. I know like two in the world. Okay, so that was an unfair question. How many of you are WPF4 programmers? I'm getting like 2 out of 50. WPF something older. About 2 or 3 times as many hands. Windows Forms. I do know all your shoulders work. Okay. Everybody's a Windows Forms programmer. So I'm going to show you doing the same thing in Windows Forms, and then in WPF4, and then with the help of some Surface libraries. And I'm sorry to say that the moral of the story is that although you can do this work in Windows Forms, you're almost certainly going to choose not to. Okay? So my Windows Forms demo comes from the Windows 7 training kit, which you can download, and I'll show you how to find that when I get to the resources section. And you can see that it is a complicated solution with a bunch of different demos all in the same solution. And I'm going to run this one here that's called MT Inertia. Up it comes, and it may be hard to tell at first, but let me pull them apart so you can see what we're dealing with. This is trying to be collage, right? It, for simplicity, it only opens 4 pictures out of the same folder that collage looks in. And as you can see, they open up very small. I'm going to try to make them bigger. Bear with me. There we go. Now, the inertia is cranked up. You see my hands are nowhere near the screen, right? And it's still moving. This is an inertia sample, so they've really turned the inertia up a lot so that when you're finished moving it, it still moves. Okay, calm down. Got wildly crazy desert. Try to make someone else big. Apparently I've had my chance when it comes to successfully enlarging pictures. They're so tiny, they may not look very tiny on the screen, but my fingers basically completely fill up the picture, and it's hard to get them both in there in order to get the zoom event. Yeah, I'm not going to be able to get anyone else big today. Oh, well. Oh, my coffee cup's going to get big for me. It's not as sweet as collage, is it? It's a little bit clunky, a little bit hard to do, and yet it's got a lot of code. First of all, we got references in here. We've got references to other projects in the same solution. So inertia is referring over to gesture. Got all kinds of XAML references, WPF references, and then we've got not one but 2 wrapper libraries. And these wrapper libraries, Windows 7.multitouch and Windows 7.multitouch.winforms, are downloaded as part of that Windows 7 training kit. Okay? So there's a lot of kind of moving parts and things that you have to deploy. And then on top of that, this file alone is over 300 lines long. Okay? And it's only doing that. There's no way to add more pictures or bring guys up from the tray below or anything like that. So it's hundreds of lines of code. And what it's doing, you can see some of the variables here, stuff about angular velocity and initial velocity. And what it does is it gets the 2 touch messages and says, how far apart in time were they? How far apart did you move your fingers? Therefore, what speed are you moving at? Therefore, what speed should I be zooming or rotating or whatever at? And then with the inertia, what happens is after the messages stop, we slowly decrease the velocity so that you kind of smoothly skid to a stop. So there's pages and pages of math work here, translating things, making things bigger and smaller. It's pretty hard work. I'm not saying you can't do it. Go ahead and download the Windows 7 training kit. You can get this sample. But this is over 400 lines of code, and you can see that it's a long way from optimal, right? So let me show you another piece of code. Now, this particular code is WPF for code. And I have the exe here that I can run. Now, rather than loading a picture, he just loads a blue square. But you can imagine it's not much work to put the picture in here instead of the square. And I can touch the square, pull it around, make it bigger, make it smaller, rotate it, give it a little flick. It'll go carry on by itself for a while. So that's pretty nice. I think it's better than the Windows Forms version. It's a little bit smoother. So you're thinking, okay, maybe I should figure out how WPF works. And if I had to write 300 lines in Windows Forms, how many lines of code do I have to write in WPF 4? How does 275 sound? Did I open the right thing? I did. Scroll down to the bottom. That's line 76. Okay? And frankly, some of that is the using statements that were generated for you, right? So a lot less code. Maybe 1/5 or 1/6 the code. Because some of this capability is now being provided to you by WPF. Now, we're still doing some work with transforming matrices and figuring out inertias and decelerations and so on. There's still a fair amount of work in it. I want to leave him running and open another project. Okay, this is also a WPF 4 app. We've got some XAML. And I'm just going to run him. Another square. Pick them up, drag them around, make them bigger, make them smaller. Now, do you notice a couple things? First of all, do you see the little like highlight dots in the square? They're actually showing you where my fingers are. Okay? They're a little hard for me to see because my fingers are on them, but I can see them kind of blurting around the edges of my finger. It's a little better feedback. Let's go back to our blue square. There's no such feedback in here. Okay? Another kind of subtle thing, remember the shadow in Collage? When I pick this square up, we get the shadow. And as I move him around, the shadow actually even shifts. That's just showing off, really. And then I let go, and the shadow disappears. The blue square, no shadow. Don't get that feedback that says, yeah, you have picked it up. When I fling the blue square at the edge, he just stops like he's landed in plasticine or something. Over here, if I fling this guy at the edge, he bounces back. Okay? It's really the sort of thing that makes people feel that it's like a realistic UI, that they get these smooth to a stop or even bounce back off edges. So this is obviously a way more sophisticated sample, right? We've got the finger highlights that are showing you about the rotating. We've got the shadow on the pickup. We've got the bouncing from the edges. We were down to 75 lines of code. How much more code do you think we have to go up to in this better demo? How about zero? Does zero work for anybody? This is the code behind for that running code. All there is this initialized component call that the wizard makes for you. There's absolutely no my code whatsoever in here. Okay? Why? I'm using a toolkit. All the smart boys and girls use toolkits. And specifically the Surface Toolkit for Windows Touch. So Surface is this very sophisticated, complicated, expensive piece of equipment for which a lot of code has been written by some real smart people. And to take that code, those libraries, and bring them into Windows gives you these wonderful capabilities. So here's my XAML. I have a grid. In the grid, I have something called a scatter view. A scatter view is like what you saw in Collage. It's a view on which items will be strewn, right? And that control understands that there's things in it that are going to be moved around. Inside the scatter view, there's a scatter view item. A scatter view knows, hey, people are going to pick me up, stretch me, switch me, rotate me. That's fine. That's what I'm here for. And then just to make life simple, we just put an empty view box inside the scatter view item. But you guys can totally see how you could put a picture in here or whatever else you wanted to, right? And everything's handled by the Surface Toolkit. The stretching, the rotating, the inertia, the bouncing off the edges of the scatter view, the shadow highlight when I pick it up, the little finger glows to show where I'm rotating it. all handled by the controls. No code of mine at all. So the Windows Forms life, 350 lines of code plus all those references, including to the other projects in the same solution, which also have hundreds and hundreds of lines of code. WPF 4 life, not bad, 75 lines of code, but it's not great. Surface Toolkit life, 0 lines of code, 5 lines of XAML, and it's better than either of the other two. This is not the story that I used to tell when Windows was still in beta, when Windows 7 was not yet released, okay? This is the fall 2010 story, and it's a pretty darn good one, okay? The Surface Toolkit, if you want traditional kinds of controls that you could expect to see in a touch app, these are really going to help you. Is it going to help you write the lagoon with the waves when you move your fingers through the water? No. Okay? For that, you're going to be handling touch events. But if you want to be able to have a UI in which people have a list of, what were we doing before, approving purchase orders, and you fling them into the yes and the no piles, you can totally see how you could use the scatter view to do that very easily, right? And not have to write a ton of code. So I really want you to see that progression down to less and less and less code as we move to newer and newer and newer libraries. That's the XAML, in case you wanted it, for this code. I'm actually going to tell you where to get all of this code when we get into the resources. Now, you may have noticed that I did not exclusively use the touch capabilities of this machine while I was doing the demos with you. Okay? You can tell when I'm using the mouse, by the way, because there's a mouse cursor on the screen. Whereas if I'm using touch, do I still have that? The mouse cursor disappears while I'm touching. Okay? And so when I was opening files in Visual Studio, that was all about the mouse. When I was switching between the XAML and the C Sharp, that was all about the mouse. And the reason why? These things are tiny. Okay? For me to try to touch them to successfully, that's not what I want to click, okay? But that's what I'm happening to click. And that's just really the story of a mouse-oriented UI when you come at it with your fingers, okay? Now, there's a big 25-inch all-in-one unit that I also sometimes use for demos, and then that scrolls all the controls up so nice and big that my fingers don't feel enormous. But on this little laptop, the most Windows controls, I just cannot hit them. So as a designer, if you're going to write an application, how can you help, right? You can make maybe the buttons bigger. Okay, you can't make scroll bars bigger. You can't make checkboxes bigger. So some things are out of your control. The other thing you can do that will help is to have more gaps between controls. It's really frustrating to miss. It's super frustrating to miss and hit the totally wrong thing. Okay, so just pulling things a little further apart gives me more room so I'm less likely to hit the wrong thing. And you have to tell people what's going on. That shadow when you pick up the picture is so subtle, but it's real. People have to know, yeah, I heard you. That click worked. We're in business. And speaking of clicking, how many of you have apps where if you hover over things, you get a tooltip? Yeah? Sure. It's normal behavior. You can't hover with touch. Okay? It's touch or touch not. There is no hover. Okay? It's not like, oh, you're close. I think I'll show you the tooltip. You either touch it or you don't. So if you've got a life that's really tooltip oriented, that's kind of a pain. And let me show you what right-clicking looks like. Let's do it in Notepad. I'll select some text. By the way, ordinary, what we call panning, just one finger selecting, in most apps, doesn't scroll sideways, it selects. But this scrolls, because that's the assumption that you don't usually select vertically, but you scroll vertically. Okay? So if I select some text, and then if I click on here, touch and hold, see that circle that appears? Now when I let go, I let go too late. Let me do it as soon as the circle appears. I get a right-click menu. Okay? Now you can see I've been practicing and I didn't get a right-click menu on my first try. So if you write an application with a grid and you're supposed to choose an item in the grid and right-click approve, right-click deny, people are not going to be very happy. They're going to accidentally right-click the wrong thing. Their arms are going to get tired. That's not really a very touch-friendly UI. And you might want to change that into something where they flick things over into the approved and denied folders, or at least have buttons, like approve and deny buttons hanging out on the end. It is possible, just as I showed you can tell whether you're running on Windows 7 or not. You can tell whether you have multi-touch support or not. You can prove this trivially. Go search for the Windows touch pack, find it, download it, run it on your non-touch enabled machine, fire up Collage, and it goes, meep, you don't have multi-touch. Thanks for playing. Okay? So it's very easy to figure out whether you're on touch or not. If the person has touch, maybe you should change your UI a little bit to support that kind of their life. Maybe give them some buttons, maybe move things apart a little bit, that kind of thing. So right-clicking, not obvious and not easy once you're trained on it. But as you can see, using the Surface Toolkit is really going to help. And not just because it takes care of things like the feedback, but also because it contains a set of analogs to the existing Windows controls that are much touch-friendlier. So let me show you one more demo. This guy is called Surface Control Comparison. He's actually from a book by Joshua Blake, and I'll give you the URL to get Joshua's sample code. And what he's done in this particular piece, if you download his code, you get a whole book's worth of sample code, and hopefully you're interested in his book as well, because it's a good one. But what he's done in this particular app is he's built the XAML, he's put traditional WPF controls and controls from the Surface Toolkit side by side. Now, these aren't like the scatter view control that's super touch oriented, but they're just touch versions of existing controls. So if I try to click this button, I get really irritated. There we go. It takes me a lot of tries to successfully click this button. The Surface button, I get much, much better hit rates on. And notice how it reacts when I click it. It lights up, it gets bigger, it says, yes, I definitely heard you. One of the things you need to know is that when you're using a touch UI, your finger is on the screen. So, for example, if I check a checkbox, I maybe don't see if it's checked or not because I put my finger on it. When I check the Surface checkbox, it lights up and flashes, and even around my finger, I can see that I successfully hit it. Okay? Super important. Same with these sliders. They get wider, and you can see the light up. This slider down here. There we go. Gets much wider. You can see it even around my finger. And this canvas also gives me more feedback about where my finger is and how I'm drawing. So with the Surface-specific controls, the touch user is going to be a lot happier. Now, they still work with the mouse. If I bring the mouse cursor into play, you can see that I can choose these Surface radio buttons just as easily as I can choose these radio buttons. So there's nothing magical that it has to be touch. But they do this, ooh, I see you, and a big flash of light and all of that to the mouse the same as they do to your finger. So when you use the controls from the Surface Toolkit, even when you're building like a traditional gray boxes on a gray background line of business app, you make it naturally more touch-friendly simply by swapping out, you know, a traditional WPF checkbox with that tiny, tiny little box for a Surface checkbox, which is bigger and more responsive and gives you that feedback. So, some resources. Again, I'm hoping that you're going to get the slides. I understand all of these URLs are horrible. In fact, the URL for the Surface Toolkit for Windows Touch was so horrible I couldn't bring myself to paste it in to the PowerPoint. But I do have them all up in a browser, so why don't we kind of talk about them. This is the MSDN help for touch and manipulation. And there's a lot of it, okay? It goes on for pages and pages, and it's full of cool stuff. Like this one right here shows you what I was telling you about the scroll, how we have touch enter, followed by touch down, followed by any number of touch moves, followed by a touch up and a touch leave. And all of that gets mapped into this scrolling that we see on the screen. And if you can just catch those mapped gestures, you're obviously a lot better off than if you were to try to process each of those individual touch events. If you want people to trail their fingers in the water and scare the fish, catch the individual touch events, but you'd be happier with gestures if you can. And then these are manipulations like zooming and rotating, and they're all in that MSDN. Here is the download page for the Windows 7 Training Kit for Developers, and you can simply search for that, Windows 7 Training Kit for Developers. Just be warned, it's really a pretty big download, and it's way more than just touch, okay? It's libraries and restart and recovery and taskbar and many of the things that I've showed you throughout the day, but it's pretty old. It was last updated a year ago. Okay? So quite a few things have changed, and specifically a lot of the wrappers that it uses have been replaced by the Windows API code pack. So about the only piece of this that I'd really like you to spend much time in is if you wanted to look at the Windows Forms samples for multi-touch. But as you've seen, they're really not my first choice for how you would do this. In fact, if you're an absolutely dedicated Windows Forms developer, probably what you want to do is host a WPF control on your Surface. Okay, so you've got your buttons and your ribbons and your toolbars and your tree controls and whatever else that people have to use a mouse for. And then somewhere you've got your kind of maybe a canvas that you're going to let people draw on, and they draw with the mouse now and you'd like to let them draw with their fingers. That's great. Replace that with a WPF, or better still, a Surface canvas out of the Surface toolkit. Host that WPF control on your Windows Form and carry on from there, rather than trying to cope with all this stuff yourself in Windows Forms. That's my advice. But you can still download the training kit if you want to convince yourself by looking at the samples. This is a code gallery page, code.msdn.microsoft.com/windows-touch, full of resources for developers who want to do touch work, including downloading some wrappers and some more samples. There's also a link here to the download for the Surface Toolkit. Look at that URL. It's just outrageous. So it's got a GUID in it. I'm just not putting that in the PowerPoint for you, okay? Just search for the Microsoft Surface Toolkit for Windows Touch. That will bring you here. It says beta. It also says it was last updated in April. So I guess it's been in beta since April. Okay, whatever. It's fine. Works just fine. I don't know if it's ever going to come out of beta. I'm not privy to that. I do know that it works beautifully and that it's going to chop a ton of effort off your development time, and at the same time improve the quality of the solution you're giving your users very dramatically. So I strongly encourage you to be part of the whole Microsoft Surface Toolkit. This is the MSDN support for Surface with links to user experience guidelines and those sorts of things, as well as another way to get the download the beta, so-called. And this is Guy Smith Ferrier's page. Guy is an internationalization, Silverlight, and multi-touch fellow. He works in England, in Bristol, and he gave me the code that I showed you for the blue square and the five lines of XAML gradient square. Okay, so if you want those pieces of code, you'll get them here from where it says source code on this delightfully named Touch Me, Stretch Me, Squeeze Me, the Windows 7 WPF multi-touch story. Okay? So if you want the Windows Forms code, you go to the Windows 7 training kit. If you want the other two, the middle two demos with the blue square and the gradient square, you get them here from Guy's page. And the last piece of the puzzle, the Surface Controls comparison, is from Joshua Blake's book on natural user interfaces with WPF and Silverlight, published by Manning. And you see this link here to the source code. That's all the source code for the whole book. And if you poke around in there, you'll find this Surface Controls comparison demo, which is the guy that I just showed you. And that one, which I still have open in Visual Studio, has almost no code. It's got a couple click counts on the buttons. That's all the code does. Really, it's about the XAML that puts together all those controls side by side, lets you compare them and see which one you want. Okay? So code.msdn.microsoft.com/windows-touch. Series of WPF resources over on MSDN, and of course Guy Smith Ferrier's resources for these two samples that I showed you. It's really not logical to do Windows 7 multi-touch in anything other than WPF 4. I think I've shown you enough for that. You're welcome to drill into the code yourself, but really WPF 4 and especially those Surface Toolkit controls, they're going to get you where you need to be pretty darn quickly. Now, if you're writing a lean forward app, you need to put some serious effort into thinking about how people are going to interact with your UI when they can't hover, when they can't right click, when they need bigger controls. What gesture works well? Is there a place here for flicking? Is there a place here for zooming? How can people indicate what they want to do? That effort, that thinking, is not about writing code. It's going to be about meeting people and asking them about how they'd like to interact and maybe completely changing the paradigm of your app. But once you kind of know, as much as you can, you want to leverage that Surface Toolkit. And then when you have to catch individual gestures or catch individual touch events, you'll kind of know how to do that. If you're actually writing an app and you admit it to yourself, you know what, this is a mouse app. I get that some people are going to have touch screens, and I don't want to disenfranchise them, but it's really a mouse app. What can you do that's easy that doesn't disenfranchise those touch users? Make your controls a little bit bigger. Make your controls a little bit further apart. Okay? Because the point of a mouse cursor is much, much smaller than the point of a finger, even a little girly finger. And certainly, if you've got something in a warehouse where guys who lift up large cardboard boxes are going to click that they put something on the truck, you better have a nice big thing for those great big strong fingers to hit, right? If you do nothing else, test your app on a touch device. Okay? This laptop, which is touch-enabled, is lightweight and thin, and I'm seriously considering, I'm about ready to replace the laptop that I did the first half of the session on, seriously considering a touch laptop for a replacement. You can also buy add-on touch screens that you can just connect to your existing laptop or desktop or whatever for like $300, okay? Really not a huge investment to buy one such thing for your whole team, and every once in a while, put that as a secondary screen on one of your devices and put the app over on there and try interacting with it by touch and see what happens. And you may very quickly decide, you know what, we need to make a few little changes here to be a little more touch friendly, even if you're fundamentally a mouse application. You really have to experience for yourself trying to check that checkbox or trying to check that button and consistently missing before you kind of get it and say, okay, how can we make this a little friendlier to the mouse or to the touch when there is no mouse and there is no keyboard. So with that, I have time for some questions, and we can also take questions both from the online, if there are any, as well as from here inside the room, and I encourage you to ask me about either half, the touch half or the CodePack half, anything to do with building apps for Windows 7. Yes?
Say I build an app for Surface library. Will this later translate to work on a Surface?
So the question is, if you use the Surface Toolkit for Windows, and then you kind of get into, hey, I'd really like to use the Surface Toolkit for Surface, I think you should be in a pretty good place. part of the reason for having a Surface Toolkit for Windows was people who didn't want to buy $20,000 test units to deploy and test to, right? Like, Surface is a pretty serious commitment. And if you could emulate some of it on a Windows machine, you'd be happier, right? So what you'll see over time is WPF and Surface, their libraries meshing closer and closer together so that the skills that you take to one will apply to the other. The other question people sometimes ask is about Silverlight, and I have to say Surface Toolkit is WPF, not Silverlight, right? Silverlight is a subset of WPF. We're not saying work in Silverlight, we're saying work in WPF4. Okay, you got. That's where your big sweetest spot is right now for multi-touch work on Windows 7. Obviously, when you're on the phone, you're in Silverlight, but we're not talking about the phone tonight. Other questions? Yes. Is there an easier way to bring Windows Forms apps into WPF4? There are two things that you can do. One is that you can continue to be a Windows Forms application, but that where you had a great big white square that was a Windows Forms control that people interacted with, have instead a great big white square that's a WPF control that people interact with. So your app doesn't have to stop being a Windows Forms app, but you're using WPF4 for this thing. Okay, so that's just swapping out the control, exactly. There's a little bit of work to host a WPF control in a WinForms application, but you can find the samples and demos pretty quickly. The other thing is, and it's completely experimental and educational and not production quality and so on, but more than one person has written converters that will try to convert your WinForms app into a WPF app. Because if you think about it, they both contain some declarative statements that say, I have a button that's this big and that's located here. And even the event handlers are also there declaratively. So if you do, again, a little searching, I know there's at least one on CodePlex that will, it doesn't catch every control, it doesn't get all the positioning perfectly, but especially for you understanding, You can convert your app, then look at the code and say, oh, I get it. I understand what these constructs mean now in XAML. And so maybe that would be the sort of impetus to get you to actually convert the whole app to WPF if you wanted to. But it's not a requirement. You can use WPF for the touch part while your app as a whole is still Windows Forms, right? By simply hosting a different kind of control in your application. Make sense? So today you can deploy a Windows Forms application to all the same platforms that you can deploy a WPF4 application to. It doesn't really make an impact on your platforms. It's not like Silverlight, which does support, it can be in the browser or it can be out of the browser. Both WPF and Windows Forms are desktop applications that have nothing to do with web browsers. The difference going forward is that Windows Forms is done. There isn't going to be another version of Windows Forms. No such thing has been said for WPF. You can expect for WPF to have like a rich kind of support. And so a lot of things are showing up in WPF that aren't showing up in Windows Forms, and certainly Touch is a classic example of that. So why do things the hard way if there's a way for you to move along and do them the easy way? That's really what it's about, as opposed to being about reach. Speaking of reach, I should mention that when you use the Surface Toolkit, there's a small runtime that you need to distribute with your app. Okay? And you can download that runtime when you download the toolkit and include it in your deployment package for your application. Question here.
When doing WPF apps between Windows XP and 7, I've noticed a lot of controls are obviously going to be different sizes when you try and have them running in both environments, and it can mess up with your layout. Is there any way to go about supporting that a little better rather than detecting an OS and then making very meticulous changes?
So I'll just repeat the question. You've got a WPF, is it 4? WPF4 application that you are running the same executable on both XP and 7, but the default rendering of the controls, because WPF, like any Windows app, actually asks Windows to do a lot of the work for it. And XP and 7 render things slightly differently. Menus look different, buttons look really different, and so your UI, if you've planned it down to the pixel, doesn't look quite so identical between the two OSs. And you are right that the really kind of best practice way to handle that is to do some version detection of the OS. You can use the code pack, for example, to help you figure out what OS you're on very simply. But then the question is, would you then change the individual properties of all the controls, or would you actually swap out entire blobs of XAML? And that may be the simpler thing to do, is to sort of carefully handcraft the XP XAML and the Windows 7 XAML, and then at runtime bring in the right XAML, rather than setting 73 properties on 52 controls. That probably would make you crazy in a hurry. Yeah. Question here. For the Surface Toolkit, can you use expression? I actually do not know. If you drop me an email, I will try to find out for you. Okay? I would hope with yes. But I wouldn't want to say yes and then look foolish. So I'm going to say I don't know. But send me an email. There. Okay. Any more questions in the room? Yes.
The first part, you know, the taskbar thumbnails?
The taskbar thumbnails, yes.
Below it, the
actual icons on the taskbar itself.
When you hover over it.
Correct. That's correct. Very few people notice that. That's interesting. Let me actually demo that. So when you hover your mouse over the icons on the taskbar, the color changes. It's called the hot light. And you notice here PowerPoint, it's mostly red, whereas here Notepad, it's pale blue. It's incredibly sophisticated heuristic. What is the most common color in the icon? Okay? So PowerPoint's made out of red and white. Red wins. Okay? Visual Studio is made out of blue and purple, so it's kind of blue. And folders here, they're made out of yellow, so it comes up yellow. If you don't like the hot color that you're getting, you have to change the relative proportions of colors in your icon, okay? And so that the most common color is green, and then your highlight will come up green, okay? Simple as that. Yeah, there's quite a lot of heuristics about how they light these up so that people know what they're over. And it actually is one of the things that your progress bars and your task bar overlays, they don't show up as well when you have focus, because then you have that that white highlight as well as maybe a hotspot highlight as well. Yeah. Sure. The question online, can I change the rectangle used by the taskbar? For your clipping, yes. You can set your thumbnail clip to clip a simpler version of your application, one line of code with the code pack. Yes. And the key thing to search for there would be the word set thumbnail clip with no spaces, and that should find it for you very easily. Question here. Yes. Right, can you take control over the buttons that have been added in the thumbnail? No, you can't take any control at all. You have to add them all in a single call if you want four or two. You can have up to seven, can't have more. And you have one call to add thumbnail buttons in which you add them all in, and then they are laid out by windows, and it decides how to center them and where to position them. If you wanted two rows of three, too bad. You can't. You would get one row of six. Nor can you play tricks like, well, I'll make three buttons, but I'll figure out if you clicked on the top or the bottom half, because you just have a click handler. Okay? So you have to kind of play within the paradigm that you've been given, up to seven buttons that will be laid out in one row. Yeah. Well, I think that's all the questions that we have. So I'd like to thank the people who are online. We're going to close down the webcast for them first, and as well thank all of you. And people who are online, please click the simulcast eval and evaluate the session. Everybody wants you to do that for sure. And I also want those of you who are in the room to do your paper evals. And thank you all for coming.